Hi, and welcome to episode 9 of the first series of the Dorset Growth Hub podcast. This is a special bonus episode for you all, featuring two of our podcast speakers, Jen Swain and Aggie Matuma, plus the addition of award-winning Indian chef Sarah Ali Chowdhury, who discuss culture, diversity and inclusion. They answer your questions as a live panel and dive deeper into the topics mentioned in their episodes, from creating a new organisational culture to putting practices in place to encourage diversity when recruiting. If you are looking for more support for your business, head to our website dorsetgrowthhub.co.uk, register, and our team of business growth consultants offer Dorset businesses 12 hours of fully funded business support through events, tailored one-to-one consultations and financial help. We really appreciate your support for this podcast, so if you enjoy the episodes, please do leave us a review on Apple Podcasts and don't forget to subscribe. So over to our panel. Hello, everyone, and welcome to our second live of Beyond 2020. We have our panel here today. If you guys just want to introduce yourselves, just say hello, Jen, and let us know who you are. I'm sure lots of people will have listened to your episode already, so they'll recognise you, your voice anyway.
Yeah, of course. Thank you, Mary. Hey, everybody. I'm Jen. I'm head of operations at Three Sided Cube. We are a digital agency. We build mobile apps primarily, and I'm obviously very excited to be part of this culture, inclusion, diversity, all really important topics for us at Three Sided Cube. And in terms of my role, I'm specifically looking at operations. So I cover our processes, our people, and also our finances. That's sort of my bag at Cube.
Thank you, Jen. And Sarah, if you'd just like to introduce yourself quickly.
Hi, I'm Sarah Ali Chowdhury, and I'm a business consultant with Dorset Growth Hub. I'm also a chef, and I work a lot with PR.
Thank you, Sarah. Hopefully, Aggie can hear us as well.
I can.
Okay, fab. We just can't see you. Oh, there we go. Hello. If you can just introduce yourself and just tell us a bit about you.
Sure, no problem. Hi, everyone. My name is Aggie Matuma. I am a people professional, and at the moment, my key focus is diversity and inclusion. And I'm sure more will come up as we talk. So I'll leave it there.
Thank you, Aggie. So, yeah, we have one question from Maddie, and she has asked, what are the benefits of becoming more diverse? So I think, Aggie, if we can go to you on that first question, that'd be great.
Sure, no problem. That's a great question, Maddie. The benefits of us, there are many of them, and I'll start with the moral imperative, because I think, you know, when you think of it from that point of view, the question almost becomes, why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you want to allow people into your organization based on protected characteristics? So I guess that's where I'll start. There is the moral piece, but certainly from the business piece and the business case piece, which is also important. Lots of studies have been done which show that where you have a diverse workforce or a diverse leadership team, it translates into better business results. If we look at a piece of A4 paper, a white sheet of paper, if that's our problem space, as an example, so we've got this problem and it's this white sheet of paper. If you have one type of person or people with the same experiences, same lived experiences, they will be able to cover a part of that problem. So that part they can probably solve, but there is a lot that they may be missing because they haven't got that varied life experience, those varied thought processes. If you bring people in who are different, it is more likely that you can cover more of that problem space. And where we're headed to as a global community is that our problems are becoming more complicated. They are more multifaceted. And the more diversity you have, and the diversity of thought, diversity of thinking, diversity of experience, and also diversity of approach, you're more likely to solve the bigger problems that we are starting to see in the world.
Thank you, Aggie. And Jen, I know that in your episode, you talked about how at Three Sided Cube is something that you guys are really keen on, becoming more inclusive and more diverse. So what benefits does it have to you guys?
Yeah, I mean, I would absolutely echo what Aggie's saying there. Really interesting way to put it as well, in terms of a problem space and different people's perspectives. I love that. In terms of the team at Three Sided Cube, I think when you are an inclusive organisation or you're working towards being an inclusive organisation, one of the benefits there is that you bring the whole team along with you. And everybody feels that as you are moving through that journey. So I think, you know, obviously the diversity of opinion, the diversity of approach to things is really, really beneficial. But just creating that kind of team culture of it's something that everybody believes in and you're working towards it, I think is you know, a real benefit to any organisation.
Sarah, I just wondered if you had anything to touch on that.
I think when we talk about diversity, people tend to sort of think it's more about brown, black people. There's so much that covers diversity. We're talking about, you know, people who are in wheelchairs or children who... I went somewhere recently where there were children who suffer from cerebral palsy and some of the way that they're treated in the schools and things like that. There are just so many aspects to diversity that I think we kind of see it as a smaller portion of our life, but it's so big and it's so vast that I think we are learning as individuals on how to manage and understand it as much as we can. But we're constantly learning. And I think the key is to be more accepting all the way around.
Yeah, I agree. Thank you, Sarah. Oh, Aggie's just got something else to add there.
Hi. Yeah, I think to Sarah's point, I would like to add something to that as well, in that absolutely when people hear diversity, inclusion, they do think we're talking about the females, we're talking about the people of colour. And, you know, sometimes they do also encapsulate people with mixed abilities as well. But what I want to say is inclusion is about everybody. It is also about the middle-aged white male as well. Studies have been done which show that where you have an exclusive organization, so an organization that is not inclusive, it also impacts white middle-aged males as well. And they feel like they don't belong and they feel like they have to mask as well. I think the number, the recent one said 45% of white males still feel like they have to mask and be somebody else in organizations that are not inclusive. So, you know, when we talk about inclusion, certainly when I talk about inclusion, it's about inclusion in its broadest sense and for everybody.
Thank you, Aggie. Yeah, I think that leads on to the other question from Christina, who's asked, how do you combat the view by some people in an organization that Dorset is a predominantly white region and therefore racism and diversity is not an issue here? So, Sarah, I think you've already got your hand up there.
I think that's really interesting what's been said there, because you'll find that where there are predominantly, if we're talking about the racism side or, you know, when we're talking about people of colour, and then we think that we're in an area where there are a lot more white British people, then actually it's a lot more difficult for the minority groups to fit in. Minority, though, even the word minority is actually a negative word. When we say, like, you know, or they're from a sort of, you know, one of these ethnic minority groups, the word alone, minority, so we, as somebody who is from the Asian background, we've already got that, like, oh, thanks. You know, we're from one of those that didn't quite make it into the other groups. That's how it would feel. So even that word needs to be kind of like eradicated completely for a start. And the next thing that I can say is I was born in Bournemouth and I've been to school in Bournemouth. I've spent my life here. And if I'm completely honest, I would be lying if I said I had a really difficult time, because I did not. I have had probably a very, very luxurious life when I was at school. I was very loved by everyone at school and college and university. In my working life, I feel that I've been able to fit in. And at the same time, I just want to point out that sometimes people do play that card. And I think we all know what we're talking about when people think, oh, you know what, I'm not really getting things my way, so I'm just going to play that kind of racist card. I've done it. I'm not going to lie. I've done that a few times. You know, even with things that when I didn't want to do something, we will use things, what we can, to our advantage. I remember when I was at school, I hated swimming. And I used to say, oh, sorry, I'm not allowed to swim. It's against my religion. And they wouldn't even question it. They wouldn't even go as far as questioning it, because they thought they were already out of their league when it came to that sort of diverse element. But what I think personally is, I think it can be very difficult for some people. It depends on so many other factors. It depends on how that person is with themselves, how comfortable they are with themselves, if they're the type of people who are able to go and fit in with other people as well. If you're able to, if you're kind of an outgoing person and you can go and have a conversation with somebody, then that's all great. But if you're somebody who's really, really shy and you're a bit of a, you know, introvert, and you're not that great at communicating effectively with people, then they may feel that they are a little bit almost left out, or that they're not feeling included in certain things. The actual question that that Christina's asked is how we combat the view by people in the organization that Dorset is predominantly white and therefore racism isn't an issue. Racism is an issue everywhere. It really is. But it's how you're going to deal with it as a person. One of the other points I wanted to just touch on is the Rotary Club, where at the moment I'm a president, which is very, when I first joined 2 years ago, I was told not to join the Rotary Club. I wouldn't fit in at all because the males there, well, basically it was mainly male dominated, first of all. And secondly, I was told they were pale, stale males. That was the term that was used. And that one always comes into my head because actually it's not like that at all. And right now, 2 years later, where they have an Asian woman who's a president, I think that's taken a really, really big diverse step where, you know, people have the image that they might be mainly male focused. They're actually not. You won't know unless you get involved. And with the organizations in Dorset, I do feel like they are doing their bit. They are doing, there are things that are out there, opportunities for people. I think organizations are trying to reach out to other communities as much as they can. That's my personal opinion. And people might think, God, that was over positive. But I honestly think that is the way that I see it.
Thank you, Sarah. So I was actually interested to know, because I tried to champion within our organization that, you know, when we're hosting events and when, you know, we're supposed to be leading the way for businesses. So I was looking at statistics of Dorset. So I think there's 4.4%, it said, on the recent ONS survey. So 4.4% are from BAME backgrounds. But then that 4.4%, 41% of that were white other. So I guess that would make it 2 to 3% from a BAME background. So I think from an outsider's perspective, people might see that, well, there's only 3% in Dorset, so we only need to represent 3%. And I think that might be where Christina's leading with that. So just to give you, Aggie, a bit of a background if you didn't know about Dorset, because you're from London.
Yeah.
So I just wondered if you had anything to add on that.
Yeah, I do. And I think that's the beauty of these conversations, because I think it was really interesting to hear Sarah's experience. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as with anything, there are lots of different versions of experiences that people have had. So I think the point around how you show up and, you know, how you take things, you know, that absolutely does have an impact on, you know, outcomes and how you feel about things. But I do think that we can't necessarily overlook the fact that there are disparities. There definitely are disparities. So the conversation around playing the race card, etc. So again, some may do that, some may not. I can definitely say I never have done that. And I think often the initial default reaction is that it can't be racism, you must be playing the race card. But usually if people sort of stop and actually look at what's happening, there are sometimes unconscious biases at play. So I think to answer your question, Mary, and the question that was posed, I think, you know, if Dorset is 3% Black and Asian specifically, I would say that the aim would be to represent that 3%. And I think when you think about the ONS censuses, they were done in 2011, so they're almost 10 years old. And if you look at where they've extrapolated, where they think the data is actually going to land now, the UK is probably not at that 13% Black and Asian minority ethnic anymore. It's closer to the 18s is what they're predicting for the next census next year. So I'm sure those numbers will trickle through to Dorset as well. So I think what I say, yes, I think, you you know, if you're in the Outer Hebrides and there isn't a lot of diversity, it would not make any sense whatsoever to sort of try to over-egg or over-represent people. The whole point of these conversations around we need to represent the communities that we are in. So if you are in London, it is that 38% Black and Asian minority ethnic. If you're in Dorset and the number is indeed 3%, then that would be the number. And what I would say to people is in your organization, if you look around the building, and if you look around to see who's sitting around which tables, are you representative of where you are? So in Dorset, if you've got, I'm going to do very quick maths, which I can't do very well, but if you've got 100 people in a room, are three of those of a Black and Asian ethnicity, if we're using those numbers? And are they in the senior positions or are they just at the junior level? So it's that piece. But yes, don't over-reg it if you're where you operate is not, it doesn't have a high ethnicity.
And to say that, if people see it as not an issue, how can an employee start the conversation with maybe a leader or a senior person that maybe it is an issue, and how can they introduce that?
I'm going to answer a slightly different question. I'll come back to that ever so slightly. So I think Sarah said you grew up in Bournemouth. Did you say Bournemouth? Did I hear that right?
Yes. Yeah.
Awesome. And I love your experience, Sarah. And I think that's what everyone should experience. You know, you should have a great experience. You should just be and be free to be without feeling that there's any discrimination. Now, I have an example, which is the opposite, unfortunately, of Bournemouth. I haven't grown up there myself. But my brother, who's obviously Black, because I am too, is with a white lady, lovely lady. They live together now, about a year or so. In the time that he's been going back and forth to see her, he's been stopped by the police about four times. And we're talking about 3 years maybe. And his partner, his girlfriend, has a brother who is of a similar age. He has never been stopped, never, not even once. And we're talking about a short period. So I think there are definitely extremes of experiences. And then there are beautiful experiences like Sarah as well, which, again, this whole conversation is about the fact that people should be able to say, I've never experienced this and it hasn't happened to me. So fast forward to the question that you actually asked, Mary, and it kind of links really. I think the first thing I'd say is for employers and managers and leaders to please don't assume that there aren't any issues. And even if you hear one person saying that they're okay, it doesn't mean everybody else is, which is why I sort of made that point about my brother's experience of the same place that Sarah's also experienced as well. And then for the people themselves, so the people of color, or even if they're LGBT or if they've got a disability and they feel like there are some differences for them and there are some barriers, I think it's having those open conversations with your manager, not necessarily finger pointing, not necessarily saying you're the problem, but saying, you know, I'd really like to speak about how things really are for me. I'd really like to speak about how this business has felt for me or experiences I've had in this organization, and almost open it up in that way. And hopefully the managers will be open to hear it.
Thank you, Aggie. And thanks for sharing your brother's experience. It's interesting to hear different points of view. Jen, I think this one could go to you. Any tips for keeping my team motivated working from home with another potential lockdown approaching? So I know you guys have been doing loads of fun stuff at Three Sided Cube. So if you'd like to tell us a bit more.
Yeah, of course, I can do. Just before we do that, I kind of want to just say to the other two ladies panelists, you know, that great to hear about your experiences. And I think I would just add to that, there's a really important piece around education, businesses educating themselves. And I know that, you know, I know, Aggie, that's your purpose, your being, right? So, but I think if you've got people in organisations who don't believe that racism and diversity is something that needs addressing, then that's quite a large problem. And hopefully we can start to work in organisations that are more open. I think, you know, if I were that employee, I would put my hand up and say, I'd really like to do some training around this. Is there some, you know, can we get somebody in to come and talk to us about that stuff? But sorry, coming on to the culture.
Yeah, no, that's great. Thank you.
So, yeah, we've had a really, really interesting sort of six to eight months. We've been trying to accommodate what was a very, very active culture schedule, I guess, before lockdown, and trying to take that into a remote situation. It's not always easy. And I think certainly we're getting to the point now where people are wanting to limit their screen time, because obviously everybody's remote working and spending loads and loads of time in their week on a screen. So trying to get your team engaged in doing stuff via a Zoom call or via a Google Hangout is getting to the point now where, as I said, people are looking for downtime rather than more video calls. So we've certainly explored the options of doing kind of socially distanced activities. Certainly when the weather was great, that was nice and easy. But every year we have an award ceremony. So my next challenge is trying to work out how we're going to keep the team engaged with that, because that's really important, because it's a time of year where we recognize each other for the great work that individuals and teams have done. So as I said, I think it's really important that there are people within the organization for whom that is a focus, because keeping your team together and engaged is going to be really crucial right now.
Yeah, thank you. And if you listen to the episode with Jen, she shares a few ideas that they've had some really fun things to do, like, was it neon life drawing? I think you
were talking about neon life drawing class. Yeah, that was one of the things. Yeah. I mean, more quizzes than you can shake a stick at. Yeah.
Yeah, I wonder if there's another lockdown, what new crazes will come about other than Zoom quizzes and banana bread, you know, what's the next thing?
It was awesome to see how people kind of innovated though, right? Because it sort of happened organically. Yeah, I'm sure business teams up and down the country were all finding new ways to sort of keep teams together and stuff. Myself and my partner both work from home, and she did a fundraising thing with her team in the middle of lockdown where they all had to dress up in fancy dress every day and do a Joe Wicks workout before 9 o'clock. So you know, we've all got our ways of coping, keeping our teams together right now.
I mean, if I may, Jen, you know, thank you for sharing that. That was really helpful. And I love what you said about ensuring that it's someone's job, someone's role to ensure that that communication and that engagement keeps happening, and that motivation. Because I think with anything, isn't it, if you haven't got that concerted effort, it's easy for it to drift. Yeah, so that's awesome. Really good to hear. And I think what I'd probably add to that as well is that communication. So keep talking, keep talking about the things that are happening, what people are up to, how the business is doing, you know, keep people informed while you're doing that as well. But great, Jen. Thank you.
Thanks, Aggie. Just as kind of a separate point, but also I think probably an important one, talking of lockdowns and things like that. We've had to rejig our benefits, our benefits package for the team in recent months. And I think what I've been very aware of is whilst, you know, we very much relied, we're a team of around 40, we very much relied on each other for taking care of each other, I guess, on a day-to-day basis. When everybody's remote, that becomes much more difficult to have the well-being of your team monitored, becomes much trickier. So we've actually renewed our kind of benefits, as I say, and we've brought in more mental health stuff. So we now cover up to 6 counselling sessions for anybody in the team who needs it. And I think just adjusting and tweaking what you do as an organisation to suit a changing environment is really important at the moment as well.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Because culture, diversity and inclusion, I think, you know, we could talk all day on all sorts of things that are included in that. I mean, we've already touched on just a few. So thank you for sharing so far. So we've got another question. How can I identify if my business has a need for a culture change? So I think, Aggie, if we go to you on that one, you've already mentioned about there's someone that it's their job to sort of notice. But, you know, if a leader thinks everything's fine and maybe an employee came to them with some questions, you know, how would you manage that?
So I think in terms of how would you identify if your organization needs a culture change, it's an interesting question, because I think cultures change and they evolve and they ebb and flow depending on where you are. So I think cultures are always changing, is the first piece. The second piece is your culture can either change in a way that you have been conscious about and intentional about, or it can change just how it changes. And then you maybe don't have that accountability or that, I don't want to use the word control, because that's the wrong word, but I can't think of another word to use right now. I'm going to say control, but that's not quite the word. But you don't have the control in terms of where that culture goes. And it almost goes back to Jen's point about having someone who's consciously aware of and thinking about how the team is motivated and engaged. The same thing applies to culture. I would suggest that if you're a leader, you're always conscious about the culture you're creating and the culture that is in your organization. And how you tweak that and how you make that move in the right direction, it's about what you do, your processes, your systems, your objectives, what do you measure And then it's also the how. So how do people treat each other? How do we solve problems in our organization? Are we the type of organization that sort of buries its head in the sand and doesn't tell anyone anything bad because we're worried about how it will be dealt with? Or are we the organization that has those honest conversations and says, actually, I think I can see the great things about this piece of work or this product, but there are some things that I think we need to think about some more. My suggestion is that the latter is better and that the latter actually supports inclusion and the latter supports innovation. The latter supports, you know, great business results. So I guess, yeah, the answer to that question is you have to be intentional about it and you have to work on it. And then also ask your employees, whether that's a face-to-face conversation, whether it's focus groups, whether it's, you know, anonymous surveys, ask your people how they're feeling. And it's not, how are you feeling? Good, bad, or something else. It's questions such as, I have a voice in this organization. I feel that my, if I don't agree with something, I can speak about it. I feel that the organization cares about me, like very almost values-based questions to ask. Really long answer. I could talk some more, but I feel like I should stop there.
Oh, fine, go for it. And Jen, with the culture at Three-Sided Cube, if you knew you needed to change things or you're happy with how things are going, how do you go about it?
Very much along the lines of what Aggie was saying, really. I was nodding my head along with her.
Yeah.
So we actually did, throughout the period of lockdown, obviously we're now in a situation where we've kind of come back to a blended situation. Some people are in the office, but majority are still at home. That's a really tricky one because you've then got kind of subcultures of your overall team culture. So I wanted to check in with the team, and we did actually do an anonymous survey to find out how people were feeling and adapting to that situation. But a lot of the stuff that we do at Cube, and I think this is applicable to any business, is make sure that the stuff that you're doing is values driven. And again, Aggie mentioned that, you know, I think if you've got a really clear business purpose and you've got values that align to that purpose, your culture is almost an organic outcome of all those things. So monitoring it, really important. But I think if there's a need for a culture change in an organization, then something's going wrong and perhaps the values aren't being followed, perhaps to the letter that they should be, would be my thought.
Thank you, Jen. And Sarah, I just wondered if you had anything to add on that point. I know you're working with small businesses at the moment and you run your own small business. You know, if you were to work with a business that's looking at employing someone or just employed a few people, you know, how can they look at creating a good culture and be an inclusive workforce?
I remember a while back, we had like a Women's International Day, and we, as part of the Bournemouth Chamber, they had invited somebody down from London to come and talk to us about what it really means. And it was an Asian woman who came and started talking. But by the time we got to the end of it, from what I understood from some people's views, is that means when it comes to employing, it means if you've got three people that you have working for you and you're about to employ someone else, then one out of the four people needs to be, you know, Asian, ethnic, whatever, minority or whatever. And I just thought that was just not, I don't think that is what it is about. I think when you have a business and you're running a business, for me as a business owner and as a business consultant, I think if you're good at what you do, it's absolutely nothing to do with what group the other person is from. Maybe the colour, the skin colour, the culture or anything, it's just not relevant. What you need to look at is who can do the job. So whether you have, you know, 10 people, this is why sometimes I think on some of these conversations, it might come across that, well, Sarah's not really like, you know, arguing in the corner of having loads of Asian women to be employed. It's not that. My thing is, like, at the end of the day, you have a business to run. You need someone to do the job and you need to employ the right person to do the right job. If it happens that you've got four people, if I've got four women who happen to be black working for me, that's because all those women are the right people for that job. It's nothing to do with the color of their skin. And when you're leading in your business, you're the owner, or if you're in charge of a team at work and you're in charge of who you're recruiting, it would almost be better to be blindfolded when you're choosing that person and looking at the skills they're bringing. At the end of the day, you want a job done and you want the best person to do that job. And that's how people do it as a business. It's nothing to do with colour or anything else.
Yeah, I think in the episode with you, Aggie, we touched on recruitment and going to diverse pools of agencies to get a diverse pool of applicants. Did you want to expand on what Sarah just said there?
Yes, please. And again, love these conversations because, again, there's always, you know, different viewpoints and different ways to see things. And, you know, again, I'm going to say, Sarah, your vision and your experience, again, beautiful, because that's exactly what it should be. It should be that people are employed because they can do their job. They should be allowed into universities because they've got the skills and they've proved that they can apply and be successful. Unfortunately, the reason why we have these conversations is that for a lot of people, that has not been the experience. And there's enough data, which I'm sure we don't sort of go into right now, but there's enough data to support that. Unfortunately, there are disparities where you've got two people with exactly the same CV, well, one person who sends two CVs, actually, one with an anglicized name, one with a non-anglicized name. What tends to happen a lot of the time is the name that's anglicized is the name that gets the call. Now, in this situation, the CVs are exactly the same because the same person has sent them to almost prove a point, or some of them actually to go to employment tribunal and make loads of money. But, you know, what you spell out, Sarah, is exactly what these conversations are about. It's about getting to that place where someone's color, someone's gender, someone's religion, as an example, someone's disability, marital status, all those things make no difference. And people are really recruiting because the person's right for the role.
Can I just add as well, Aggie, that, you know, what you just said about the CV and changing the name, I do have to agree with you on that one. My dad did, when he gave me a name, he called me, you know, Sarah. And when I said to him, why did you call me Sarah? There's like a million Asian names, which I would have preferred, to be honest, than Sarah. And he said, because I don't want you to have issues when you go to school about people, you know, having your name. And so at school, no one ever called me Sarah. I was everything but Sarah. No one believed that Sarah was my name anyway. But then I said to Dad, but what about my surname? What about when they get to my surname and you've got Chowdhury? And he goes, oh, we'll worry about that later. But in all honesty, I do understand that. And I do know that some people have had a really hard time, and some employers can be. Some employers are racist. It's a fact. You know, it's reality is some people who are in charge of recruiting people are racist. They don't want anybody who is non-white to be working with them. But I do think that is, you know, I think that people, as we're sort of getting on now, people are becoming more diverse. People are seeing through that. And it's not cool to be like that. Nobody, you know, everybody seems to be quite accepting or much more accepting than years ago. So, I mean, I do feel that we are at an advantage. I personally feel that being brought up in this area, I am at much more of an advantage. I also feel one of the things that might strike a bit of a, you know, something when people are listening to this podcast is that actually within our own communities, I always feel like white British people have nothing on racism when it comes to our own communities, because within our own sort of small arenas, when you're looking at Asian people, there are so many different areas of India, so many different backgrounds, religions, and all of those ones, they all have their own issues within each other, and they can be more racist to each other. So sometimes I do think that actually living in Bournemouth and in a place like this, I do feel that a bit on the lucky side.
Yeah, and I think you're right. I think things have definitely changed. In that, you know, certainly for me, when I was growing up, I'd have people shouting the N-word from trains and all sorts of things when I'm sort of walking past and different things. So that doesn't happen in the same way anymore. And I think, you know, thank God, when I speak to my children, that doesn't happen to them either in the same way anymore. But I think it is difficult to suggest that we are in a good place, especially when you do look at the outcomes. And I talk about outcomes in terms of employment, outcomes in terms of education, outcomes in terms of even childbirth. You know, Black and Asian women are more likely to die in the UK in childbirth than their white counterparts. So there are lots of things. And I don't think it's necessarily because people are consciously racist. I don't think that. Yes, there are some people who are in that space, plenty of people who are in the opposite space, but most people are probably somewhere in the middle. Some people just need to understand more. And I think to Jen's point, I think it was Jen, who talked about education. It's about that education piece. Racism is no longer shouting the N-word at someone or committing genocide. Racism actually sometimes is small little things that you say to someone that have an impact. Sometimes it is that, oh my gosh, that name, I'm going to have trouble saying that. I'm not going to look at their CV and chuck it away. I'm going to just go with Jane Smith. You know, that's also a form of racism, and it has negative outcomes. So it's not about pointing fingers and calling people racist. I think it's about sort of saying, what are the outcomes? What is the reality? And are we okay with that? Are we okay with these stats we're looking at? If we're not okay with it, then cool, let's do something about it.
And I think so this period of time, we touched on we talked about, you were saying it's such a beautiful time at the moment for education. Obviously, it's not a beautiful time for what's happened with George Floyd and the Black Lives Matter movement, but at the same time, it's brought about a lot of change. And, you know, this conversation might not have been happening this time last year. So I think a lot of people are grateful that there are resources now that they wouldn't have access to last year. So I think if we can move on to the next question, which is again about leaders considering embracing diversity and inclusion within their own teams. So how do you encourage that?
So for me, I encourage any sort of, when it comes to inclusion, I think the only way around it is food. Okay. I always think the best way to get people involved in other cultures is to eat. So for me, it would always be something around food, either people bringing in food from different backgrounds and cultures to let people try, because I think food is one of the things that brings people together. I'm very big food lover, huge foodie, and I just want an excuse to eat most of the time. So I think anybody bringing food from their different cultures, it's always amazing to taste it. And you always find that it's just lovely, home cooked traditional food. It doesn't matter where it's from, which culture or which background. When you bring food in, I find that that's a great way, and it's probably a very holistic way of working when it comes to people, because I'm not talking about, you know, let's sit down and get a flip chart and start talking about how we can integrate, because that's, to me, that's just boring. I'd be like, just bring me the food and then we can integrate talking about the food. That's the way that I see that. I think is a holistic way that people need to eat. It's nice to bring in different cultures, to talk about, you know, different, but that's because, you know, that's my passion. So that's probably, you know, a bit more of a holistic way to do it. But in terms of being more inclusive and trying to encourage leaders, I think it's a really clever way to do it, because people don't even realise they're doing it.
That's quite a practical point or an idea to use. I think, Jen, you just about to put your hand up.
Hey, yeah, I mean, I love that idea. I'm also a big food fan, so that would definitely get me talking about inclusion. But I think it depends on the organisation that you're working in. And I would say it can be really, if you've got quite a lot of barriers facing you around this stuff, it can be quite helpful to start small. And I think we did touch on it earlier in the conversation. But inclusion is just about difference. It doesn't matter really what that difference is. It, you know, it could be anything. It could be that someone's a vegan. It could be that they're gay, like myself. And, you know, there's a lot of stuff that about inclusion and diversity that you don't see on the surface. And I completely respect and understand your points, ladies, about recruitment and, you know, impact of a name on a CV. It's a bit shocking to think that stuff like that still happens, but sadly it does. But I think if you've got a conversation that you need to have about pushing these topics, start small. Get your team together and get them to talk about something about themselves that's different, you know, and it could be just their eye colour, but at least you're sharing conversations about difference and what that means to each other. And from there, you've got a good basis to move forward.
Thank you, Jen.
So I think, you know, listening to both of you, I love what you both had to say. And I think what I've taken out from what Sarah has said is that it's about finding that common ground, isn't it? Really. And that's almost to Jen's point as well around speaking. And I think those are the two things. It's having conversations. And it could be something where it's, you know, how was your weekend? You know, how was your weekend can tell you so much about a person, who they spent time with, what they did, what was important to them. And that sort of gets you to sort of understand who people are, because ultimately we are all human beings. Ultimately, we all have the same pieces around. We like food. We want to, we need to eat. We like to talk. We like to feel heard. We like to feel like people are interested in us. So I think it's almost that inquisitive conversation about people. So, you know, if I was talking to Jen, I'd say, oh, I spent the weekend with my girls, or, you know, it was my daughter's birthday. Oh, really? How old is she? Then you have a conversation around that. And then, you know, culture, things like that may come up later on. And if Jen said, you know, me and my partner did this, oh, what's her name? Let's talk about it. So it's that interest in people without necessarily calling it inclusion, without necessarily, you know, saying this is now diversity, this is now inclusion. Mm-hmm. I'm just interested in you as a human being.
Thank you, Aggie. So I think there's one more question that's come in about measuring culture, and how do I know if culture change is working? Are there ways I can measure or review culture in my team? So I think we'll end on this, and then I've got one last question for you all. But I feel like we just scratched the surface on all this. We could talk for a lot longer. So Aggie, if I go to you first on that question.
In terms of how to measure culture. So it's going to sound airy and fairy, but I'm going to say it anyway. So I think culture is something you feel. You know, it's not something that's that tangible that you can see necessarily, but I think it is something that you can feel. So I'll start there. And then I'll say there are many ways. So we talked about surveys before, didn't we, around how are people feeling? You can see sort of the dial moving, hopefully, in the right way if the culture is developing and people are feeling like they're more able to express themselves. You can also look at things such as labor turnover, sickness, absence. What's that looking like? If you're a small organization, you'll just know, you know, Lottie's taking less time off, as an example. I've just made up a name. You know, you can look at things like that. Also, customer feedback. So again, if you work with clients, which I'm sure most of us do in some way, shape or form, what is that looking like? Are we getting more sales? Are we getting better feedback from customers? Those are all indications of hopefully a culture improving. And then things such as performance reviews, how many people are engaging when we have our quizzes and when we have our dress up days and things like that. How are people engaging with those? There are loads of different indicators that can show you that. And they're all indicators, I suppose. But that's how I'd say you can look at that.
Thank you. And Sarah or Jen, anything to add to that?
Well, thank you, Aggie. That's saved me an answer. It was an anonymous person as well, so I'm hoping that wasn't somebody from 3 Side of Cube, and I've got to get the answer right now. I think everything that Aggie said, obviously, you know, there's lots of monitoring and measurement you can do around just how your business is performing is a really good indicator of culture. But I think the other interesting thing is to do some measurement around your values. So again, it's something we've implemented at Cube, and it's been really effective. But we have a recognition system in place where people can recognize other members of the team for living one of our cultures and demonstrating it in how they work or a particular activity they've done. And I think looking at that, you can get a measure of what's going on in your team. And I find that really, really helpful.
Thank you. So to wrap up this conversation, I just wanted to ask you guys your one thing that someone listening can do this week to make their workplace more inclusive.
I think everyone should be told to bring in different food.
I look forward to seeing the food at the office. Yeah, that'd be good. DGH, let's do it. Well, depending on if we go into lockdown or not, but maybe it's the takeaway delivery service. Jen, what about you?
I think for me, we did this a few weeks back, and I think it's so important. And it sort of tunes in a little bit to what Aggie was saying, but taking an interest in another human being that you work with, that you probably don't work with every day, just to find out how they are, that would be the one thing that I think everybody in a team can do and help move things forward.
Thank you. And Aggie?
Yeah, so piggybacking off what Jen has said, I think it's be inquisitive. And I think if I want to boil it down to an actual practical thing, I would say when you ask someone, how are you? And they say, yeah, I'm fine, I'm good. I would like you to, at least with one person who maybe you've seen a slight difference in for whatever reason, to say, no, really, how are you? And whether that is you seem a bit quieter, or really tell me what's happening, is quite busy at the moment, really, how are you? I think that's what I'll say.
Thank you, Aggie. And just a big final thank you to all of you from me. I really enjoyed having this topic as part of Beyond 2020. something that I had to push for and got questioned on, and whether it be controversial. So I'm so glad that we could have this, you know, open conversation and really push the agenda, because it's not something that, you know, some people are too scared to cover it. So yeah, thank you. And thanks to all the people that have been listening. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks again for listening, and thank you to our panel. You can head over to our website to leave us a message in how we can support your business. The next topic in episodes 10 to 13 is all about winning new business. So please subscribe to be the first to listen.